Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. Budget 2019 has been a mixed bag from the personal finance standpoint. While there is cheer for small taxpayers, the much-wanted hike in Section 80C deduction limit hasn't really come through. But there are quite a few welcome developments on the housing front. We will decode the fine print of the budget in this week's show. My guests are Mayur Shah, partner at EY, and joining us in a bit would be Prashant Thakur, head of research at Anarock Property Consultants. Thank you very much, Mr. Shah, for joining in. You know,
thank you.
You always help us out to understand the nitty-gritties and the fine print. Many a times, the devil lies in the detail when it comes to the budget. But your first thoughts on what we heard on the personal taxation bit.
So for personal tax, especially if you know, if we look at low income group, I think it has been welcoming change. You know, the fine thing which this government has done in this budget is that, you know, while tax base has been expanded by, you know, lowering the limit and everything, however, they have not removed them from the tax net. What they have done is offering additional rebate, whereby they have to mandatorily file the return. And therefore, you know, the tax base will always remain as it is. And at the same time, they will not be required to pay any taxes thereon. So that's a very good way of monitoring the entire population, whether they are getting right benefits and things like that or not.
Sure, sir. I mean, I take your point. But before we get to, you know, more details, and we will get to the rebate calculations in case you are still confused about how it really works. You know, for the sake of argument, let me ask you this, that now taxpayers earning taxable income up to 5 lakh rupees get the rebate, correct?
That is
so
right.
In effect, there is no tax liability as long as your income is below 5 lakhs.
That's absolutely right.
So why not just do away with the slab? I mean, what's the rationale, the thought process behind it, do you think?
Now, there are two things which we need to really note. Mm-hmm. That this rebate is available to only resident individuals. So those who are non-resident will not get that benefit again.
Okay.
Right? And second thing, if they don't do it this way, then the people who are required to file the return will never file the return. And the tax base will then get eroded again. With so much of challenges, they brought in tax base, you know, larger their tax base. Now, if it gets reduced, again, they will back to square. So, I think that is the reason why they have done it like this.
Okay, so we see the point of view of the government as well. Now, let's come to the calculation. I mean, how does this work? The rebate earlier, I think, was applicable if your income is up to 3.5 lakh rupees. Just go over the maths for us, please.
Sure. So the way it happens is that, you know, simply put, my net taxable income, if it is 5 lakh, when I say net taxable income, it's all taxable income reduced by deductions under 8IC, 8ID and 8IL, all other deductions which are available. After that income is up to 5 lakh, mm-hmm. then I will be entitled to claim a rebate. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is whatever tax payable that on that income, which is net taxable income, I will compare it with a rebate, mm-hmm. which is eligible, which is a maximum is 12,500.
So earlier, this rebate amount used to be 2,500.
That is
when
right.
The income threshold, the income limit was 3.5 lakhs.
Correct.
How does it now go to 12,500?
So what they have done is now if you calculate the tax between 2.5 lakh to 5 lakh. The maximum slab is 12,500. Whatever tax can be collected is only 12,500. So they have said either actual tax payable or 12,500, whichever is lower, will be available as a rebate.
Okay.
So now, you know, by virtue of that, the entire income will be not subject to tax, or you will not be paying any tax thereon because of the rebate.
Okay, so that's how the math is working. You don't have to pay tax if your taxable income is below 5 lakhs, but you do have to file your return. That's the important point.
Absolutely.
Don't think that you're exempt from filing your return as well. So that's extremely important.
And another point is that this is available only to resident individuals.
Correct.
So non-resident is not entitled to this benefit.
Okay, fair enough. So that is the good news for those who are falling within the sub 5 lakh taxable income category. Then we come to the others. I mean, initially there was a bit of a cheer. We thought that, you know, if the slab goes and everybody benefits, that's not the case. But there is some tinkering in standard deduction here and there. Not much, but do you think it helps?
Not much, but it really helps. So, you know, Earlier, there was 40,000 as a standard deduction, which was in lieu of, you know, medical reimbursement up to 15,000, which was been done away with, and conveyance allowance, which was 19,200, which has been done away with. So effectively, benefit was only 5,800. Now we can say the benefit is 15,800.
Okay.
Right.
So,
so only one thing which we just really need to know is that, you know, if my income or any taxpayer's income becomes 5,01,000 rupee, then he will be paying tax of 12,500. So see the disparity which can arise. That for earning additional 1 rupee income, my cost is going to enhance by 12,500. So there is some, you know, kind of a mismatch over here. That if my income is increased only by say 1 rupee and I have to pay 12,000, so I'm going to go out of pocket for a material amount then.
So make sure your employer is paying you at least 5,12,500. So at least it nets off the tax liability.
Correct. And if you, if you do the math, you know, I'm expecting a kind of a pay rise to the extent of 30%, then only I can match. Otherwise, it becomes extremely challenging.
Well, these are the complicated ways of taxation, and we have to kind of just live with it. There's no change. Of course, you know, a bit of a disappointment because ATC limits, again, nothing happened. I personally was thinking that maybe medical insurance, the deduction on that for people below 60 will also go up this year.
Correct.
But
nothing has happened.
No change at all. Any other thoughts on the personal tax front?
No, I mean, apart from that, I would have felt, you know, if you are encouraging people to invest in, you know, fixed deposit and all that, the limit is 10,000. You are enhancing for one category. You should have enhanced it for all category and said, you know, up to 50,000, that should have been exempt. Because ultimately...
This is the, you're talking about the TDS?
No, this is what I'm talking about, that any interest which is earned from on a saving account, up to 10,000, it is available for deductions.
Right.
Now, if that limit would have been expanded, it would have helped everyone.
This was expanded for senior citizens last year, right?
Correct.
So senior citizens who are earning interest income, up to 50,000, it became exempt from taxation.
Correct.
Or there was a reduction available,
correct,
basically.
But this would have been channelized all money into a bank. And see, bank is going through a difficult phase. This would have helped them in,
mobilize,
you know, having
more deposits.
Yeah.
But speaking of banks and deposits, at least on the TDS, tax deducted at source, there is some relief there. So what is the new limit, if you could just run us through?
So the new limit is that up till now, if any interest is earned by any taxpayer, up to 10,000 was not subject to TDS. Now this limit of 10,000 has been enhanced to 40,000, which would mean that any taxpayer who earns interest up to 40,000, in that situation, there will be no TDS. Now that does away with forms which were to be filed for non-deduction of TDS, which was 15G. Now those formalities need not be required if your income is up to 40,000.
Okay, so that's a little bit of a, you know, minor help coming in case you don't have taxable income falling in the bracket. Then you don't need to go to rush to the bank and ask for the 15G form. Okay, so that pretty much sums up what we've seen in terms of changes on the personal tax front. Joining us now is Prashant Thakur, Head of Research at Anarock. Prashant, great to have you on the show as well, because I think more than personal income tax, there were far more many announcements on housing. But first up, your initial thoughts on what we heard on the 1st of February.
Glad to be part of this show. And, you know, to be very honest, considering that this was supposed to be an interim budget, the kind of announcement that were made for real estate, you know, it was a pleasant surprise for the industry itself. So there were, you know, two broad buckets in which I would like to classify the various announcements that were made. One would be obviously be the end users, home buyers, small investors, and the other bracket would be the developer fraternity. So to start with what has been announced or what has been done for home buyers and small investor is, the biggest change that has been announced is there will be no tax on notional rent on the second house. So this is a quite significant move for people, you know, who are looking at buying second home or let's say weekend home. So it makes it more lucrative.
Yeah.
Now, for example, it also.
Yeah, absolutely, Prashant. Just hold that thought. Let me actually go through the fine print of this provision, help viewers understand it, and then I want to come back to you to understand the impact. So, Mr. Shah, now, you know, for those who don't understand the concept of notional rental income, let's go over the basics again. Because this is the big one, as Prashant is saying earlier, whether you have let out your second house or not, or whether it's empty or doesn't matter, there was this concept that there is deemed rental, notional rental income. So, therefore, there's income tax that needs to be paid, right?
That is correct. So, you know, if a person is owning two house property or more than one house property, the other house property, even if it is not being let out, there was a notional rent which was considered as income and the tax were required to be paid on that.
So basically it's absolutely clear that, you know, you have one house that you might live in, you have a second house which may or may not be occupied, may not be generating any rent for you, but the taxman doesn't care anymore. No concept of taxation on this notional rental income.
Absolutely right.
Okay, so it only comes into play if you have a third house. And then that'll be deemed to
be
having
let out, yeah.
Okay.
So there are certain nuances herein, and if we really look at it from that perspective, say I have two properties, and one property I want to let out, but I can't let out because there are no genuine. I don't have an option to consider the second house property as not self-occupied. I have to still consider. Now the downside of that is that if I have borrowed money to invest in a property with an intention to let it out. If I find another person in next year whom I can rent it out. Now this interest cost I could have carried forward to the next year and set it off against those income. Now I can't do it because it is considered as a self-occupied property. So there I interest cost.
So even if you have let out this second house, let's say you're lucky enough to find a tenant and you've let it out, and you want to offset it against the loss from that house property.
That I can do it. But if I could not let it out, then I have a challenge.
Okay.
Right? So there is a bit of challenge for the persons who are investing in second property for investment purposes rather than for self-occupations.
Okay. Prashant, you want to comment on that? I mean, that was exactly my point. How does this change in taxation really influence the buyer's decision, whether it is for investment or whether it is for self-use?
See, earlier the buyers who were considering second home as an investment option were kind of being discouraged because of this notional tax on notional rent. Now, with this not being in play anymore, I think the attractiveness of buying a second home or weekend home increases. So, and also, let's also consider this fact that, you know, in today's scenario, now, for example, let's say a person might be working in Mumbai and he owns a house in Mumbai, and he might own a second property in Pune, where his family lives, and they cannot relocate because of some personal work. He had to pay, you know, tax on notional rent on that second house also. So it was a bit taxing on the middle class and the actual home buyer. So with this going on, I'm assuming that the demand for the second home or, you know, people buying weekend homes would go up.
Sure.
Hang
on for one second. Let me understand the concept of loss from house property as well and how that is going to apply in this case. Because, you know, Mr. Shah, till now, let's say one house was self-occupied. You had invested or, you know, you had bought a second house. And there was loss from house property because of the huge interest cost. You've taken a huge loan to buy that house. You could offset this loss for the next 8 years at the rate of 2 lakhs per year. Carry forward the loss for at least the next 8 years. Now in the new scheme of things, when there is no concept of notional rental income, what happens to the concept of loss from house property?
So now, since even if you have incurred loss, it will not be allowed to be carried forward and can be set off against the rental income in future. So now that means this loss will be lost permanently and it will not be allowed and you will not be able to enjoy any benefit on account of these losses.
Whether or not you're earning rental income from this house?
Yes, it will not be allowed now.
Oh, so the concept of loss from house property basically becomes meaningless for the second house?
For the second house, if it is SOP.
If it is SOP. Prashant, you want to comment on this and whether, you know, this is going to impact things in any way?
No, as I earlier said that, you know, this is kind of not at least going to discourage people from buying second home from investment point of view. So in my opinion, this definitely is a positive move and it will not impact either way in a negative term, I mean to say.
Okay, gentlemen, fair enough. So on that note, let's move on to the other major change that happened with respect to housing, and that is capital gains. If you are choosing to sell off a house property, how do you reinvest to prevent the capital gains from getting taxed? Now, here what the government has done is it has given you the option of reinvesting these gains, not in just one single property, but in two separate properties. However, there are some caps there as well. The quantum of capital gains that can be reinvested. The fine print, sir?
Yeah. So the way it happens, if any capital gain arising out of sale of a house property, and if that gain is below 2 crore or up to 2 crore, then a person has an option to invest in two properties. And if he invests in two properties, that is still eligible for that exemption under 54. So to the extent capital gain is invested in a property, that will be considered as exempt from capital gain tax regime.
But the cap being 2 crore rupees. Now, what if, and earlier I believe there was no cap. The entire proceeds could be reinvested in another house property and you don't have to pay tax on it, right?
Correct. So both remains as it is. So, you know, here there is an option given. Either you invest in one property and there are no limit, you can claim exemption for the entire capital gain. So if you have a property and you have realized gain therefrom is say more than 2 crores and you invest in one property, that can completely exempt, that provision still continues.
Okay.
In addition to that, if you have a gain up to 2 crore and you want to invest in two properties, that is still eligible, at least at the option of the taxpayer. They want to invest in two properties, they can do so.
Okay, fair enough. So you have the option of reinvesting in either one property or splitting it out in two properties with the cap, then in that case it's only 2 crores. And also there was this line about this is a one-time available scheme, once in a lifetime.
Correct. So any taxpayer can avail benefit of these schemes only one time in their lifetime. If they availed once, then thereafter they cannot avail this advantage of these changes.
Okay, okay. So now basically you want to reinvest into two different houses. Offer is applicable only once in your lifetime, at least as per the current provisions of the law. Prashant, your interpretation of this and whether, I mean, I don't know if it at all spurs any more house purchases now that people can sell an old house and buy a sort of two properties instead of one, whether that impacts the market at all.
So I'll give you a practical example. Now, let's say if I have sold my house in Mumbai, South Mumbai, where, you know, and let's say I have a capital gain of 2 crore. So in the earlier scenario, I was only allowed to offset against one property. Now, for example, let's say I want to buy a house in Thane or let's say Navi Mumbai. So this 2 crore amount was so huge, I was forced to buy a house which might be, you know, too big, or let's say that would increase my ticket size. Now, with the option given to me to split this capital gain into two houses, I can, you know, very well choose the size and, you know, buy a two houses. The second, example I would like to give is, now, for example, let's say if a person wants to sell his house and buy two houses for his two sons, he can very well offset these capital gains in against two houses. So, in my opinion, I definitely feel that this is a positive move that will give some impetus on the demand side of the real estate.
Okay. All right. Prashant, you did mention that, you know, there were some sort of relief measures that were announced for developers as well. The one that immediately comes to my mind is that now as a developer, if one is holding unsold inventory, earlier you had to pay tax. I mean, the exemption was only 1 year. After that, pay tax on this notional rental income. That has gone up to 2 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. So to what extent is that a help, you think, for the real estate developer fraternity?
See, first of all, it is going to bring down the inventory carrying cost for the developers. So developers were kind of, you know, a lot of stressed. First of all, under RERA, they had to expedite their project completion. Now, in the slow demand scenario, what was happening, after completing the project, and unfortunately, if he was not able to sell it in the market, he was saddled with this unsold, ready-to-move-in inventory on which he had to pay taxes. Now, with this extension, his inventory carrying cost has gone down. And the second biggest benefit that he would have is that he will not be forced to give a deep discount to the buyers. Now, you know, what was happening in the market right now is that because of GST on under construction property, there was a clear preference of the buyers to buy ready-to-move-in inventory. And the developers, to expedite the cash flows, were willing to give a discount. But with this relief coming in, they'll be able to hold the inventory and wait for the right price. So this is definitely going to help the developer in a positive way.
Okay, well, we hope it's really taken in the right spirit. You know, Mr. Shah, your thoughts on this, other measures on real estate. And actually, from the buyer's point of view, we forgot to discuss one point. The TDS, I think, on rental income, there are some changes there as well.
Yeah, so, you know, TDS on rent paid, which was required to be done if the rental paid is around 1,80,000. Mm-hmm. And this was not only for house property, but rental on even plant and machinery was also included therein.
Okay.
Now, if rental is up to 2,40,000, there is no requirement for TDS thereon.
Up to 2,40,000 of rent income in a year?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
So so the person who is paying the rent or the entity paying the rent doesn't need to withhold tax or, you know, deduct TDS.
Exactly.
Okay, so Prashant, then sum it up. If you're looking at this from the real estate standpoint, then all of these measures put together, I mean, what is the kind of demand supply change in the market that you're expecting? And do you at all advise investing? I'm not saying self-use, investing in residential real estate this year.
See, in a nutshell, this budget, considering was an interim budget, you know, did a lot of good tweaks. I would not say big announcement, but it was, you know, tweaked to the existing norms. For example, you know, removal of notional rent, extension of affordable housing tax holidays on affordable housing, and rollover of capital gain tax to two houses. So this would definitely, you know, provide a boost to the sentiment side of the real estate. See, real estate is, you know, also driven by sentiments apart from the return that you expect. So sentiment part has been taken care of. But, you know, was it sufficient enough to bring back the vibrancy in the real estate market? I would say a lot needs to be done yet. You know, people are hoping that GST rate cut would be announced pretty soon. Then, you know, from the developer side, single clearance window is something which has been long overdue, which is kind of escalating the project cost, and which in turn is resulting into high prices of the real estate, which is deterring the buyers to enter the market.
So I'm repeating my question, Prashant.
I'm a long-term investor.
Yeah, so I'm repeating my question. This is money. We're looking at the best places to invest our money. Should real estate and residential real estate be looked at all in 2019, or give it another 1 year till the dust settles?
No, in my opinion, 2019 definitely should be given a thought when, you know, as an investor, if you're looking to buy a house. There are certain cities and certain pockets within that cities which are really performing well. Cities like Bangalore, Hyderabad have been really doing good. And if you talk about, you know, the areas like Mumbai, Navi Mumbai and Thane, they have been doing pretty good.
Okay.
So I would not advise the investors to completely ignore real estate in 2019.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So on that note, Mr. Shah, your last thoughts, you know, anything else? Because this was interim. Come July, we'll have the same conversations again. We'll see
Absolutely.
What's actually there in the final budget. Anything that you'd like to see, you know, in that budget?
Yes, I would like to see that more, you know, advantage which will be passed on to, you know, middle income group, like you said, 8IC and 8I, that, you know,
ADD.
Medical reimbursement and medical insurance things should go up, because insurance industry then will again have some advantage of this. And particularly, you know, the definition of lower income should change. You know, earlier, you know, we had 10% of tax. So now 5 and straight 20. I think, you know, some rationalization should happen over there as well. So as to, you know, make sure that the spending capacity of middle income group also increases because of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think we'll keep waiting and see what the eventual final budget for 2019 really brings in. But thank you very much for your time and your thoughts. And thanks to Prashant as well for taking us through the fine print on everything this budget has meant for the housing sector. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's SurabhiUpadhyay. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.